Let's return to our story in Genesis chapter 31. We're going to just finish that chapter out with verse number 55. Remember that Jacob and his family covertly left Haran after he'd been there for 20 years. He'd worked 14 years in total for his two wives, and another 6 years to kind of build up his own personal wealth. But now he feels that things are looking bad regarding the relationship between himself and his in-laws. So he figured he better get out of there while the getting was good. But his father-in-law and his brothers-in-law caught up with him a little way southeast of the Sea of Galilee after about 11 days' journey. And there's a little bit of a confrontation, but it is resolved. They have a meal. They set up a monument. It's a monument that shows the hard feelings of this situation because they name, or at least one of the names of the monument that was given was Mizpah, because, as they said, may God watch between me and you when we're absent from each other. Meaning, I don't trust you, and this marker shows that God's going to keep an eye on us, make sure we don't misbehave. Now, Laban in particular said, I don't want you to take any other wives than my two daughters, and I don't want you to mistreat them and take care of the grandkids. And Jacob basically agrees, and you need to stay on your side of the marker. So once they've got all that sorted out, we're now ready to get Laban out of the story altogether. Genesis 31:55. Early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his grandchildren. Now, the year that we're talking about here, to assign a year, it's 1919/18 BC. The slash is there because Jewish years start in the spring and go until the next spring. So the 11 boys and one girl range in age from 12 down to 6. Joseph is the youngest one. He's only 6 years old at the time. So Laban goes through all his grandkids, gives them hugs and kisses. He apparently kisses his daughters goodbye as well, even though they are not happy with Dad because they believe that Dad had been ripping them off as well because he'd never set aside the dowry money that should have been set aside for them. And so they're kind of glad to get out from underneath his control. So he kisses them, and then he blessed them, you know, wishes them well, wishes God to take care of them. And then Laban departed and returned home, back to Haran. And we're not going to hear from him anymore. So in chapter 32, Jacob now shifts his concern. In the first part of his return journey, the 11 days, and then this meeting was kind of the 12th day, apparently, he was concerned about his father-in-law and his brothers-in-law, worried that they were going to take by force everything that mattered to him. Well, that's been resolved. So now he shifts his concern to what's awaiting him. Remember, 20 years ago, he left under a very bad circumstance of having tricked his father and making his twin brother angry at him, so angry that Esau had said, when my dad dies, and they were expecting that pretty soon, I'll kill Jacob. So that's what prompted Mom to talk to Dad about sending Jacob away for a while to get him married elsewhere. And so she had said at the time of his departure 20 years ago, you go up, stay with my brother and his family, get married, and don't come back until I tell you it's safe. Now, the anticipation was, once Dad died and Esau got angry about that for a little bit longer, he'd eventually get over it, and then she could say, Jacob, it's safe, come home. Well, Dad didn't die. So Esau has not gone through that grief period which he swore after which he would kill his brother. So Mom has never told him it was okay to come home. But God did. God told him, you need to go home. And so that's what he's doing. But he's still worried. He shouldn't be. I mean, he's supposed to trust God. But he is concerned, what's Esau going to do once I come into his presence? So chapter 32, Jacob went on his way, meaning he left the place of Mitzpah, the place of Galeed, or where Gilead, the region of Gilead, gets its name, the witness pile of rocks, and travels probably another day or two south from there and sets up another camp. And it says that the angels of God met him. Now, what does that mean? He apparently had some sort of vision, maybe similar to the vision he'd had at Bethel when he saw the stairway going up into heaven and the angels of God going back and forth on it with God standing up at the top of those stairs. Maybe something similar to that. But he sees these supernatural beings. And verse 2, when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. So he called the name of that place a word in the Hebrew dialect, Machanaim, Machanaim. This is a dual ending, and it means two camps, a pair of camps. The camp of God overwatching him, and his camp. It will get a secondary meaning from something that Jacob does here, and I'll talk about that when we get there. But Machanaim is not very far from the Jabbok River, which drains into the Jordan River about midway between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. And it will later become a fortress city for the Davidic and Solomonic kingdoms. Now, verse 3. Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. So he has been concerned enough that he sends some messengers, probably by fast riding camel or donkey, something, to go the several days' journey ahead of them, not to the place where his father is, but rather down to the in-laws area of Esau. Esau was married into the royal family, as we would say, of Mount Seir, which is south and a little bit east of the south end of the Dead Sea. And he will eventually, because of being so wealthy and so powerful, he will eventually become the leader of that whole region of Mount Seir. In fact, by this time, he's kind of well on his way to being that. And the whole place will get its name changed to his nickname, Edom, which means red. So these messengers sent by Jacob go to Mount Seir or Edom, and he instructs them to say this, thus you shall say to my Lord Esau. So the wording here is very important. The two brothers are twins. They're only a matter of seconds apart in age. Esau is the elder. And so by all technicalities of custom, he should refer to his older brother with honorifics like sir, which is the meaning of the word Lord here. Thus says your servant Jacob, which is a further emphasis on the idea that you are my elder brother and I'm your younger brother. I respect you. I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. Now, Esau already knows that. It's kind of an introductory thing to the next. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, female servants. I have sent to tell my Lord in order that I may find favor in your sight. So he says, I have prospered while I was away for the last 20 years. And there's, I think, an implication here. I want to make up for the past. I want to make up for the breach of our relationship. And what was that breach? It was the fact that Jacob managed to arrange for himself becoming the heir of Father Yitzhak, which means upon Yitzhak's death, Jacob will receive two portions of the material possessions of Yitzhak, while Esau, his brother, will receive one portion. This is why we hear from time to time about the double portion. The inheritance was always divided up into the number of sons plus one extra portion, and the double portion went to the heir. And so Esau, by right of his few second seniority in birth, should have received that double portion, but he's not receiving it. Jacob is. And so the breach came over property, over possessions. And so Jacob is intimating here, signaling, I want to make up for the fact that I kind of pulled your leg. I Jacobed you. I grabbed your leg and pulled you off to the side and took the senior position in inheritance. Now we'll see that he is going to follow through with this offer in a very tangible way. But Jacob gets panicked by what he gets as a reply message. Verse number 6. Messengers, these messengers of his, return to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau. So he came and told him, you're on your way. And he's coming to meet you. And there are 400 men with him. Now that should give you some indication as to his wealth status. Their grandfather, Abraham, earlier in our story, had 318 adult men in his militia that could be armed and sent out to help rescue Lot. Well, Esau's got 400 guys that he can call up and bring with him. Now, we'll find out later that Esau is not intending to do anything bad. He's actually coming in order to help provide escort for Jacob to make the rest of his trip. He's actually being quite kind because every indication is he's gotten over his mad. He's gotten past his anger and has dealt with issues from 20 years earlier and before. Because remember, when he first sold his birthright to Jacob for a bowl of red lentils, he didn't care about it. And then when Jacob actually ended up getting that and the blessing, 20 years before our story right here, Esau suddenly did want it and was mad that it was gone. So he's been kind of conflicted and not altogether mature in how he's been dealing with these things, but that was 20 years ago. Now he seems to be better. But Jacob doesn't know that yet. All he knows is that his guys are saying, Esau said he's going to come and meet you. And by the way, we saw him getting ready to leave with 400 others. And they must have hightailed it back to Jacob. It's several days ride from Seir, Edom, southeast of the Dead Sea, up here to the hills on the the northeast side of the Jordan River between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. So Jacob was greatly afraid, verse 7 tells us, and he was distressed. He's not sure what am I supposed to do? So he divided the people who were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two camps. So maybe, I don't know, maybe he was thinking about, you know, there are two camps here to begin with, my camp and God's camp, the angels of God camp. What if I divide my camp into two parts? Verse 8, thinking if Esau comes to the one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape. So he's thinking, if Esau attacks one of my two camps, the other camp will have a chance to bolt and get away. Now, again, he needs to be acting in faith here. God has told him that everything's going to be okay, that he needed to come back, and that the blessings would be upon him. He needs to trust God. Now, he does check in with God. Verse number 9. Jacob said, "Oh, God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac." So the God of Abraham, Isaac, now Jacob. "Oh, God who said to me, 'Return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good.' I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love." This is our word chesed in Hebrew. It's the idea that God really likes us. He wants good things for us. And so he is acknowledging that he's seen that in his own life, that God likes him and wants good things for him. "All these faithfulness that you have shown to your servant, for with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I've become two camps." So this is where I get the thing that I've repeated several times, that when Jacob left to go on this search for a wife from among his cousins way up 2 weeks to the north, he only came with the clothes on his back, the sandals on his feet, and the staff in his hands, and maybe a little supply bag. That's it. Because apparently Dad said, "No, you need to go and work for yourself for a while. I'm not sending you with anything to make you wealthy. You go take care of it yourself." So here he is saying, "When I left to go north 20 years ago, I had nothing. And now look at this. I've got so much that I can divide it up into two big camps here at Mahanaim." Two camps. Verse 11. Then comes the prayer request. "Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you have said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring, your seed, as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he verbally expresses the promise. He says, you told me that you were going to do good for me, that you were going to make my offspring like the sand of the sea. Just so many, I wouldn't want to even try to number it. But here I am facing a very real possibility of my own twin brother trying to kill me and my family, including my kids. So he's basically saying, what are you going to do? How are you going to keep your promise when this is the way things look right now? So, verse 13, he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau. Now, take note of the number of animals that he gives to his brother. Like I said earlier, he has been intimating to his brother, I want to make up for the fact that I kind of jumped ahead of you in the inheritance game. So take a look at the number of animals here. Just this number is a huge, huge wealth item. And we don't know exactly what it represents in reference to Jacob's own wealth. If this represents half of what he has, which I don't think it does, then he was exceptionally wealthy. If it expresses one-third of his possessions, he is definitely very, very wealthy. But think about this. If it's only a tenth, which is what I kind of expect it may have been, he is unbelievably wealthy. So here's the gift, starting in verse 14. 200 female goats and 20 male goats. Now that is a major breeding flock. 200 ewes and 20 rams. Again, a major breeding flock. Anybody that had just one of those groups would be considered exceptionally wealthy. But he can give away this many, and it doesn't take a dent. It doesn't make a dent in his property, in his personal belongings. Still not done. 30 milking camels and their calves. So 30 camels with their babies, and probably some male camels as well that must be in his inventory in order for these camels to get pregnant. Then we've got 40 cows and 10 bulls. Again, he's giving breeding stock the ability to increase even this number. 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. This is an amazing gift. We are talking hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of buying power in this gift. And so these he handed over to his servants, because remember, he's got a ton of them. Every drove by itself, and he said to the servants, pass on ahead of me, put a little space between drove and drove. So he wants to stretch this gift out so that it is given a bit at a time. You know, first, it's going to be the gift of the goats. And then a little bit later, Esau will come across the gift of rams and lamb of ewes. And then a little bit farther along the road, he's going to come across this gift of camels. And then after that, the gift of cows and bulls. And then after that, a gift of donkeys. So it is going to be many, many miles worth of gifting that Esau is going to come across before he ever gets to Jacob. And so he instructed the first, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, to whom do you belong? You know, you and all this big bunch of animals. And where in the world are you going? And those, whose are these ahead of you? Who do these things belong to? And then you're going to say back to him, they belong to your servant Jacob. So again, emphasis on your little brother by a few seconds, Jacob. And they are a present sent to my lord Esau. And moreover, he is behind us. So the whole idea is, if Esau is in fact angry still about losing out on property, these series of gifts and the kind words, the humble words in which the servants are supposed to speak in giving the gift, they are supposed to calm him down before he ever gets to two camps, to Mahanaim. And so he likewise instructed the second, the third, and all who follow the droves, you shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me. And afterward, I shall see his face, and perhaps he will accept me. So that's what he's looking for. That's what he's hoping for, is that Esau will forgive him, and that they can become close brothers again and move forward with their lives with no more tension between them. Verse 21, so the present passed on ahead of him, and he himself stayed that night in the camp. So this is all sent out during the day, and when the evening comes, he can't sleep. He apparently starts praying. And this prayer turns into a manifestation of God that we'll talk about the next time we get into the Word.